Welcome, Solari family, to the Solari Report. This is the first health series interview, and I'm thrilled to be welcoming Dr. Christopher Exley. I am over the moon that he even returned to my email. That was jumping up and down. I hadn't been that excited since, I don't even know when. It's been a long time. So I was really thrilled. So let me tell you a little bit about him, and then he can finish up. I took off my glasses because I forgot that I'm old. There we go. Now I can see. Okay. I have your book.
Nice. I like
it. Okay. Okay. Professor Christopher Exley is a biologist who has been researching aluminum and life for over 36 years. During this time, primarily at Keele University in the United Kingdom, he has published over 200 peer-reviewed scientific papers and has earned from his peers the moniker Mr. Aluminum. Now, Dr. Christopher Exley, to me, is, I would say, one of the most important people in my family's life and my community of the vaccine injured. My son was injured by his baby vaccines in 2008. And as the Solari family knows, from my story, his brain swelled probably hours after his injection, but it continued swelling and more neurological things happened. It looked like he had a stroke, but he didn't have a stroke. He had Bell's palsy. He had all the cranial nerve involvement, eye problems, you name it. And he's 15 now, and I am working really hard to not have any of his brain have any of the aluminum. So we do lots of our mineral water and different things that Dr. Exley has talked about. And the reason that I chose aluminum for the first thing that we would study in the health series and meeting with Dr. Exley, not only is he the top guy for aluminum on the planet, if you're going to be healthy, you really have to look at the great poisoning. What exactly is poisoning us? In our community of the vaccine injured, we know that it's heavy metals, obviously something in the vaccines. And when you look at the ingredients in the vaccines, what is in almost every single one? And the top choice, I mean, the top poison is aluminum. So when Dr. Exley came to Autism One, 2011 is when I actually got to fly there. And then 2015, I saw you on the computer.
Chicago.
And Chicago, yes. It's always there. I love it. Except the last few years, but anyway, it is a magnificent place. You gave a speech a lecture that blew us all away. And then in 2018, if I'm correct, your paper came out that showed all the deposits of aluminum in autistic boys' brains. And I get the chills just thinking about it. I had to call everybody I knew that has boys that are the same age as mine, younger, older. And we all just thought, oh my God, you know, we're all right. It's aluminum, it's mercury, it's everything that's in these vaccines, but we really think it's aluminum. So what we would like to learn from you, the Solari family, is why did you get into aluminum? What is it about aluminum that makes it so different from everything else? And maybe what we can do about it, because it causes so many awful things to go wrong in our bodies. So that should only take about 10, 15 minutes. Yeah. That was a lot of questions. Sorry. I'm so excited. Okay.
Well, thank you for the invitation to join you. And thank you for getting up early to do this interview. It's very helpful to me.
Oh, no problem.
You know, I went to the University of Stirling in Scotland to do my biology degree. And I chose to go there because, first of all, Stirling is a beautiful place. It has a loch, a lake within its grounds where you can go fishing, and I was a fisherman. It's also set in a beautiful place and surrounded by mountains and lots more fishing. And I wanted to go fishing, so I thought,
I'm sold.
This is the perfect university for me. It also had something called the Institute of Aquaculture part of it. So in the early 80s, the industry known now worldwide really as aquaculture was very much in its infancy. And it's all about, can we grow fish for our own consumption, farmed fish? And in that area, there were a lot of new salmon farms, people trying to grow salmon for human consumption. So in the fourth year of my biology degree, I had to decide upon a research project. And, you know, while I could easily have just gone fishing, actually I thought, well, much better, I can even do something with fish and with the fish I love, which are the salmonids, the salmon and the trout. And about at the same time, you know, totally out of the blue, and my sister has never explained why she did this, I received an envelope from my sister, who was at university in London, with an article from Scientific American all about acid rain in the Adirondacks in the US, over in your side of the pond. Mm-hmm. It alerted me to the subject that aluminium might actually be the problem of acid rain and not acidity per se. So I asked somebody at the Institute of Aquaculture if they would supervise me doing a project on aluminium toxicity in fish. And the rest, they say, you know, is history. I was, and I've used this before, but I was hooked by the subject very, very quickly. And, you know, I was never a fish physiologist. I was never a fish biologist. I was simply interested in fish as something I like to go and catch and eat. But also, once I'd looked at the subject with respect to aluminium and aluminium toxicity, I opened up something, a story that at the time I couldn't appreciate the enormity of the story. I do now, I think, and that's why I wrote the book that you very kindly show, mm-hmm. the interview. And to me, you know, you've said, well, aluminium, aluminum needs to be right up there as one of the, you know, most important poisons for human health. Well, yes, I concur totally, but I concur simply based upon the fact that through these nearly 40 years of being obsessively learning and practicing research in this area, it's become so clear to me that man's activities altered the normal way in which the earth runs, to the extent that they allowed something which nature had forbidden, nature had kept out of all living things for the whole of life on earth. All of a sudden, man was starting to introduce it back into life on earth. And in doing so, every single form of life that came across it, from bacteria, viruses, through to human beings, was suffering. And the only thing that aluminium is today is toxic. That doesn't mean that if one was to survive this toxic burden, that in 100, 200, 1,000 years' time, there may be some way in which aluminium is used in a positive way in some form of living thing. But I've often said, I don't think that'll be a human because we won't survive it. So aluminium is pervasive. It's everywhere. It's in all of us. It's in every cell in our body. And it is only toxic. So, yes, you know, we should be alarmed. But, you know, I've never been, the book I don't think is alarmist. I never want to be alarmist. I just want to tell you the story that I have learned being completely obsessed by this subject for so long. And then I guess, you know, that's normal for anyone when their whole life, and certainly their whole academic life, has been focused on one thing. You're quite happy when somebody else is interested too. So that's why I'm happy to do interviews like this. So that's how I got to aluminium.
Right. And this, I'm just showing the book again, and we'll have links to this so the Slurry family can purchase it. Everybody needs to buy it and buy it for all of their friends. And this can be the new Christmas gift, just like we did Robert F. Kennedy's book, The Real Anthony Fauci. We should include this with everything. It's just something that's important.
You've brought up Bobby Kennedy's book. And I love Bobby Kennedy. You know, I admire him hugely. And we've communicated over many years. And I bought his book, and I also bought it for several members of the family and people who I thought would be interested in reading it. Mm-hmm. And Bobby's book sold at least a million. I'm not sure. It sold a lot of copies.
Yeah.
And that's great. But Bobby's book is like a thriller. In other words, it's not going to inform you for life. It right. tells you about things that have happened and, you know, raises the possibility of future consequences, etc.
Right.
My book, which unfortunately has probably only sold a few thousand copies, is
not for long.
It's literally it's a Bible with respect to aluminium. And if I am right, of course, in what I believe about human exposure to aluminium, then, you know, we are on some sort of slow but sure catastrophe of sorts with respect to human health. And even if I'm only part right, it still means that probably many human diseases are either caused or made worse by aluminium. And of course, if I'm completely wrong, which is the best answer, then so be it. I've done my best to raise the red flag. But it's just interesting. You brought up, you know, Bobby's book, and I remember him saying, oh, you know, we don't make any money out of selling books. Well, actually, Bobby, if I'd sold a million, I would have made $1 million. And I would be rich.
Well, let's work on that.
Yes.
I think that this is a thriller. I think it's very interesting. You go through everything and it's all science-based. You're actually following the science. And I also like, and then I'll let you get back to telling me about the different things that aluminum can do to us. But I really liked how you didn't start off to say, this is terrible. You know, aluminum's awful. Everybody, it's awful. You actually learned all about it first and then started adding things maybe to the fish water. Remember you put the, remember, of course you do. You wrote it in the book. You added the special type of mineral silicon to the fish water, and then they survived. You actually opened the door and you didn't smell dead fish and you were so thrilled. And it's almost like you were led down this path, and every single thing you would be like, oh, it's in the food. Oh, look at this. It's in our makeup. Oh, it's in deodorant. And then, but how's it getting in here? It's in the sperm, it's in the ovaries, it's in the injections, you know, like you, every single thing was just a learning experience. And that's what we go through in the book. And that's what I really liked about it. It's really straightforward. And then it tells us how we can do something about it.
Yeah.
So I like it.
I appreciate that. I mean, you know, I think of it, to use the old Hollywood type vernacular, the greatest story never told. Because,
yes,
you know, this, I question myself often, how did I pick up on this story? I mean, I'm not, to a certain extent, I believe in fate. And I think to myself, well, you know, what happened? Why is it that I picked up on this? And of course I did so very, very early on in my PhD research is when I realized there was this incredible relationship between two elements, between aluminium and silicon. And that is the story, the story. Silicon keeps aluminium out of living things. Take away the silicon, aluminium has access to living things. Man takes away the silicon in different procedures by smelting metal and all sorts of ways. And we have the aluminium age. Now, the aluminium age per se is also good, of course, because, you know, when I was allowed to fly to the US, which I'm not anymore, I would have come in an aircraft made of aluminium. You know, there are so many different ways in which aluminium has made every single person's life better. So aluminium per se is not bad. Right. But generally what we've done throughout, from the Industrial Revolution onwards is when we brought something new to the table, we've asked the question, right, yes, it looks to be pretty useful for this and that, but is it safe? No one did that for aluminium. Or at least they did it in the early days. They did it in the late 19th century, even early 20th century. And then, of course, the industry and the propaganda took over. And it became something that was benign and completely unreactive and something that could be used in any way whatsoever. And no one needs to legislate or anything, regulate its use. And that's where we are today, of course. There is no legislation, regulation with respect to its use. But the story itself, it's a wonderful story. And I think I do cover it a little bit in the book. And if I had the energy to write another book, and I'm not sure I will, but if I did, then the story part of it is probably what I would want to write about again. You know,
as I said,
the greatest story never told. Silicon and aluminium together, benign, apart, problems.
Well, I'll buy a boat, I'll row over, and then I'll come and help you.
Well, I think you're allowed to fly, aren't you? And
yeah,
I can't fly because I'm not vaccinated, you see.
Yeah, so I'm not vaccinated, and I'm not allowed. I can fly there and I can fly back. But yeah. I'm not sure if we have to test. And then what if they change it while I'm over there?
Well, okay.
And then I've got my two babies, you know, I've got my 15-year-old and my 10-year-old. And then I've got my husband, and none of us do any vaccines. Nah. And we would never do the COVID vaccine.
No.
And we would just be stuck. So then we'd have to buy a boat.
And I was talking to Del Bigtree. Mm-hmm. I said, well, how come you're coming to England? In fact, today or tomorrow, they're coming for a meeting in Bath in England.
Yeah.
I said, how are you going to get back in the US? He says, oh, it's okay for US citizens. So obviously, the virus is okay as long as you're of a certain country.
It reads passports. Yeah. It's a smart virus.
Yeah.
It's a magic virus.
Yeah.
So the scary part... Well, everything's a little scary about it, but I know that we can do things about it. But the one thing, you have some really interesting studies that you've done. First of all, the technique of finding aluminum in cells was really interesting to me. I have some color stuff. I should have put it for slides, but you can make, let's show the aluminum in... Let's see. Look at how it glows. This has been sperm, obviously.
Yeah. So it's it produces fluorescence, which is characteristic of aluminium. And this was a big finding for us to be able to do this, because it's only since, I think we published a paper to show the method back in about 2017. So it's only since then that we've been able to use it extensively, and particularly, of course, in the brain tissues.
Right.
And my colleague, Matt Mould, is a real expert in that area, and he's done all the really wonderful work in this area. You know, all these papers are available through my website. They're all available free of charge. So, but it was a major breakthrough, not just to be able to measure how much aluminium, but where it is, and indeed, what does it look like? You know, that was the big revelation about autism, was that we found the majority of the aluminium not in neurons,
right,
but in the types of cells, the housekeeping cells of the brain, called the glia, the microglia, and also in the lymphocytes that come from the body into the brain to help out. So there's a mechanism of getting aluminium, for example, from a vaccine injection site all the way to the brain in a matter of maybe days, maybe less. And of course, once a cell of any sort enters the brain with aluminium, at some point or other, the aluminium will kill that cell. And then the aluminium is released, and it can then be further toxic to everything that's around it. So it's like a Trojan horse. These types of cells, like lymphocytes and others, will bring in aluminium. They will die. They will release their aluminium, and that can cause neuronal cell death. That could cause an encephalopathy. That could cause something that looks a little bit like a stroke, for example. So, you know, that's where the real issue lies. And again, and I've said this in interviews from about 2017-18 onwards,
mm-hmm.
until we saw this, you know, I really couldn't, for example, I couldn't see a mechanism whereby aluminium in a vaccine was within sometimes days, weeks, causing brain damage in an infant. I just couldn't see a mechanism for that. Now, of course, right. I see it. It's absolutely scary. Now, it doesn't cause it in every single infant. So there's obviously something different about the infants where there is a problem and those where it is less of a problem or not something overt as it is in others. So,
right. You know, there's a lot more studying to be done, but
there's a huge amount more. But of course, they won't let us do that, will they? That's all been stopped.
But I have plans. I'm winning the lotto. Don't worry. We all have plans. We're gonna do this. So, what was now, as far as autism goes, that was a groundbreaking study. But before that, you had found it in Alzheimer's patients. Mm. And a lot of my home health care that I do are for patients that have dementias of all different kinds. And some of them are just due to poor nutrition, and others are due to kidney dialysis. And then a lot of them are just all of a sudden, they didn't just lose their car keys. They don't know what the keys do.
Yeah.
And these are really, really smart, intelligent people. And they're back in diapers, and it's just to watch the deterioration, and there's nothing that I can do. And the horrific medicines that the people put them in, if you read the back of the box, I mean, they're soaked in blue, you know, they're blue color, aluminum, you know, I mean, what good is that going to do anyway? Don't get me started. But
I think I've said this, and I will say it to anybody. Dementia is not an inevitable consequence of aging.
Right.
Right? Not within the normal lifetime of individuals, which I would say, let's call it 100 years.
Right.
No one should get dementia within a 100-year lifetime. Dementia is caused by toxins in the brain, not necessarily only the effects of aluminium, But I've also said that if you've got no aluminium in your brain tissue, you will not get dementia. And we've, you know, we've looked at a set of 20 donated brains, age range between about late 60s up to about 105. In all of these individuals, they didn't die with of dementia or with dementia. In fact, they had no neurological issues and they had no neuropathology either. And guess what? They also had no aluminium, or at least the lowest amounts of aluminium we've measured, in their brain tissue. So for whatever reason, these people were not accumulating large amounts of aluminium over time in their brain tissue, and they did not get any form of dementia at all. And I think this is something that people need to, you know, you often say, oh, well, he's getting old. That's why he's forgetting all these things. It's not an inherent consequence. It's a disease. This is a disease, and it's caused by modern life. And if we can recognize those parts of modern life, such as exposure to aluminium, and we can reduce them as much as possible, then it's preventable, totally preventable. And, you know, the absolute misery of Alzheimer's disease, when you've worked like I have at that front, and you have as well, you just feel completely useless and hopeless. And when you see someone recess to such an extent that they're like they've almost gone back to the womb. They've gone back to being something that has almost, except, of course, they don't connect in any way. They've lost all the sorts of personal connections that they had before. It's a devastating disease, not inevitable.
Right, exactly. You know, the other thing that I'm seeing a lot, and it's been probably the last, well, I mean, all the nurses I knew when I was a little girl, my mom had an autoimmune disease, sarcoidosis. So we went into the hospital a lot and different things. And anyway, almost all of those nurses that remained close to my family, they all got MS. At some point. I mean, we're talking a good 5 people.
Yeah.
I mean, and they didn't live close together. They didn't all live in the house. You know, I mean, they were various different areas all over. And, you know, you would call to check on them or you'd do something, and they were all diagnosed, you know, probably within the, you know, couple years of each other when they were a little older, but not that much older, you know. Yeah. So, and now I'm seeing multiple sclerosis in really young people. My husband's an architect and he meets a lot of people all the time and some very, very well off. And we've got, I mean, so many people just MS, you know, they get that diagnosis and they're really having problems with their health. And then you were doing research on aluminum and MS. So what did you find out about that?
Yeah, well, indeed. I mean, what we've actually done, primarily we've looked at, again, MS brain tissue. And, you know, we've done the stats and everything. There is way too much aluminium in brain tissue in people who've died with a diagnosis of MS. You know, the one thing about, I mean, MS, if you had to sort of, if you didn't know, if you were sort of saying, right, these are all human diseases, which one of them is most likely caused by aluminium? And I would go for MS. Yeah. And I go for MS simply because everything it tells us about it, the fact that the large degree of autoimmunity, the way in which we know, for example, that aluminium is capable of inducing the body to attack itself. So we know that if it accumulates in certain places, like, for example, in the myelin sheath of the neurons, as we see in MS, then its presence there is dangerous in itself, but it's also dangerous in that it can induce the autoimmunity that we see. It can induce the body to attack itself, those particular areas. We did a study also with the silicon-rich mineral waters with MS, and again, these individuals excreted huge amounts of aluminium.
And well, let's talk about that, because that's a way that we can help as soon as you finish that thought. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's I mean, we've seen this in MS, we've seen it in Alzheimer's disease, and we see it in healthy controls as well. But in, you know, clinical trials are difficult to set up. They are logistically difficult. They are expensive. So our clinical trials have lasted 12 weeks. And in 12 weeks, for example, in the Alzheimer's study, we actually got 20% of the people taking part showing clinically relevant improvements in things like cognition. And we saw in those same individuals, slow but sure removal of aluminium from their bodies. Now in the MS, it was different. In MS, we saw consistently high removal of aluminium over almost the full 12 weeks. In other words, after 12 weeks, who knows what might have happened. Anecdotally, and I think I write about it in the book, right, we do have evidence that people improve. But in the trial itself, we don't. You know, you do these trials because you think you might be able to then do a larger trial for a longer period right. of time with more right. people, because you prove something quite significant and important. But oh no.
Well, the problem. Yeah, the problem. Well, the National Science Foundation is run by the central bankers. Yeah. You know, they fund a lot of it, and all the bad guys run about everything when it comes to that. So I really think that this is, Catherine set up the health series and we discussed it when she hired me, that we wanted to create a better way. We wanted to think of, I've been doing this for years with my son. I don't have health insurance. I don't do it. And I'm not well off at all. I just know that I have to use these doctors and I have to go once a year to see them. So I save, and then I go and I spend on the expensive, you know, doctor. And then I have other people that I work with that I know, oh, this is who I'll use for emergency. And then I have a travel health insurance, a travel accidental coverage that I get from my AAA auto insurance. And then, you know, in case I get hit by a bus or something, I can, you know, that'll be covered. I should probably knock wood, so that won't happen. And then that would be bad. But I've never relied on a $5 copay for anything that would fix my son, because I was treated like royalty with my baby when I brought him in and held him down and they jabbed him with everything. But when I came back in that night to the ER, I mean, I was dismissed. People were angry with me. You know how it goes. And then nobody would call me back and you become invisible. So I started finding the right people, and none of the people I use have any, they don't collect insurance, so the government can't tell them what to do. And then I use a lot of naturopathic people as well. But I do know where Western medicine fits in. So if something's needed, I do use a surgery center. I'll set up a payment plan, or when he needs an MRI, I will call around like a used car salesperson would, like somebody who's looking for a used car. I call and I negotiate with people to find the best price. And then I make payments. You know, I mean, it's just, it's an extra nightmare, but I feel like I'm getting a good deal. So I think that's what we have to do. Like, I know of Dr. James Lyons Weiler.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And he has his IPAK, the IPAK, the applied knowledge. I'm terrible with those letters. Oh, forgive me. But I'll put all the links down below so everybody can look at whatever. But he has his own journal and it's peer reviewed and everything, but it's not run by the bad guys. So, you know, it's I saw that as a way, I was able to use Dr. Brownstein's paper that he did. It was just a case study, but it gave me all the information. So I went around to everybody that I knew that was high risk for COVID type infections, and I made sure that they were covered with everything that I learned from that. It was nothing I was ever going to learn from a remdesivir paper, you know? Yeah. So I just feel like we, the people, need to start funding this. And if everybody who downloaded your autism paper gave you a dollar, you would have $250,000. And that was years ago, you know, and now think about how many more have downloaded it. So I think we need to make it that we have more funding for you and not through a university who's going to get funding from the bad guys. So I think that there's things that we can do as the community. And it's not, again, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm an ex-vaxxer. I actually held the baby down and paid somebody to shoot him. I'm not anti anything. He got injured and now I was trying to fix it, you know? So that's what you walked into this and just one thing led to another. And you were like, look, it's in our brains, people, you know, I mean, that's not an anti anything, that's a person telling the truth. And unfortunately, every single thing that is the powers of this world, you know, the bankers and all the people that all the investments and all that kind of stuff and the aluminum industry and all that, they don't want you to say any of the truth, but we want you to say the truth. Mm. And so I think that I think that's the community will come together and we'll figure out something. You know, and it won't be, you know, you won't lose it because somebody gets a divorce or, you know, I mean, I really think that, and it's, if it's not you, then it's it's somebody else that we can, you know, 20 years from now, we've developed a clinic or something, but your work will lead to something wonderful. And I really know that that's going to happen. I feel like some people, I mean, even on the Solari report, I'll hear Catherine answering questions and they'll be like, where should I put my gold? And I'm thinking in Dr. Exley's work with aluminum, so we all don't die of Alzheimer's, you know, like there's certain things that are very important. And I feel that we need to focus on what we can do to make each other, to make life livable and not have all of this illness. And I mean, MS is awful and Parkinson's is a nightmare and all of these things, aluminum has something to do with it. I mean, just really quickly, this is one of the pictures that you had in your book and this is on Alzheimer's brain, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's familial Alzheimer's, a combination of amyloid and aluminium in the brain tissue, yeah.
Good Lord. I mean, it's glowing, not as bright as the autism ones glow. I mean, this was, I just wanted to show this one. I'm really bad with cameras. I mean, you caught them as they're going in, you know, across. I mean, look at the glowing. It's almost pretty if you don't know that it's.
Well, that's right. When you look at it on the microscope, it takes your breath away. As you say, it does. And the detail does too, of course. You know what? Right. Just to sort of counter slightly, I mean, you know, I have spent my entire academic career with working within the system.
I know.
I have made sure that every single thing that we have done is in the system. Yep. I mean, I don't perhaps believe in the system in the same way as I did 30 years ago.
Right.
But I knew that in order for anything that I have done to be taken seriously, it had to be in that system. Now, whether it's taken seriously today or in 20 years' time, 30 years' time, it hadn't gone through the normal processes that we understand from science, including funders, including where it's published and peer review, then it could very easily just be discarded.
Exactly.
And what I'm proud of is that, you know, we've We've got 220 peer-reviewed papers, and every single one of them will still be available in 50 years' time.
Yes. And
they cannot be refuted unless somebody does another experiment which shows that there were faults or problems or a different interpretation. And up until this moment in time, and there's no reason why this has not been done, that has not happened. In other words, it's proved easier to cover it up. It's proved easier to the media not to mention it. It's proved much easier just to say, get rid of the person who is doing this than to try to refute it. And that's exactly what, you know, that's what's happened. But, you know, the advent of things like COVID has sort of brought things like integrity to the fore. But me and my group have always had integrity. We have never worked any other way. Mm-hmm. And nothing changed in any of the research in the last few years that implicated aluminium in Alzheimer's and autism. Nothing changed. The only thing that changed was we started to get so close to the truth that we had to be stopped. And that's what happened. And, you know, the only way you can stop Chris Exley is to stop his funding.
Right.
You know, they didn't sack me. They just simply told me, because I have tenure, yes, you can come in, but you can't do research. So what am I going to do? I only exist within academia, actually, in truth, to answer the question, the role of aluminium in living things. And if all of a sudden I can no longer research that, and, you know, all of the rules only applied to me at Peel.
Right. So
the type of
exactly.
funding, other people could get the same type of funding for their research. It's only applied to me.
Right.
And there's literally nothing one can do about that. There's no sort of greater body you can go to. Hey, look at how I'm being treated. It makes no difference. Universities are totally autonomous. I mean, we did try, once we knew when the writing was on the wall, we did try to move the group. We tried to move the whole group to a new institution that would be more accommodating.
Right.
And we even looked at the possibility of setting up some sort of independent institute. But no one came up with the funding.
Right, right.
You know, we are talking about several millions to tens of millions.
Several million.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, a lot.
And that's why it was brought to an end.
Yeah, I know. And everything that you've discovered is so, I am so proud of you. You did this in the system, right? And against all odds, and you did it with integrity. And that's the one thing I wanted to let you know. Catherine asked me, what do you want to name this interview? And I said, well, it has to have three words. It has to have Dr. Exley, and it has to have integrity, and it has to have aluminum. So help me figure this out. So that's what I told. So we're coming up with a nice title. I'm so proud of everything that you've done. And just know
Thank
that
you.
We're all proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
And by we, I mean, tens of thousands of moms like me that do our late night trolling online, Yahoo groups from years ago before they were shut down, and phone calls, snail mail, we did it all. And there's a whole decade of them before me and before, and there just becomes more and more of us as the poisoning continues. So
sure.
I know that this is the easiest thing I've ever done for my son, is add in the mineral, the silicon-rich mineral water.
Yeah.
I can't even get it out. I need a drink of it. And I saw a little bit of die-off for him, maybe a detox or something, you know, a slight reaction, just because I'm so sensitive to everything he does.
Wow.
But then I noticed that his eyes worked better.
Good.
It there was some more muscle control, just to let you know. I mean, I know it's just me, but I take notes on everything. Yeah. And I noticed that he was able to read better. He was able to focus a little better, and he's not on any medications, and we do a lot of different, you know, special diets, and we do everything we can, you know, that I've done everything. Sure. They tell me, you know, hang a chicken outside and spin it around in, under the moon. I'd be like, sounds great. Let's try it. You know, so that's, you know,
biodynamic.
Exactly.
It's like wine.
So what can we do? So how much would you say that we drink? And this works because it actually removes it in the urine. So
yeah, I mean, what we're looking at, and I hope I explain this in some detail and very clearly.
You do in the book.
What we're looking at, the reason not all, you know, all water contains silicon. And the name of the active ingredient is called silicic acid. However, not all water contains sufficient amounts such that when you drink, you get an increase in its concentration in your blood, such that it is able to bind aluminium in the blood and remove it via the kidney.
Right.
So the first thing that happens is you drink your silicon-rich mineral water. The silicic acid, which is a tiny little molecule that looks very, very much like water, goes into your bloodstream and binds aluminium and removes it via the kidney. Now, all the aluminium that's in your blood is in equilibrium with the aluminium everywhere else in your body. So if you remove it from the blood, it will come from the tissues back into the blood. And so you're not directly removing aluminium from brain tissue using silicon-rich mineral water. You're continuously removing it from the blood. And that is how slowly but surely the aluminium is removed from everywhere in the body. Now, you know, we've got to be clear about this. And I think I've written on my Substack about this recently, that we're not talking about reversing damage. We're talking about preventing further damage, because aluminium will continue to produce damage as long as it is present. You will have a cascade, and that cascade will get worse, as we see in things like Alzheimer's disease and quite possibly in autism too. So what you're looking for, in the first instance at least, is to give the body its best possible chance of regenerating itself, of healing itself, by taking aluminium out of the equation. That's all it does. So I don't, you know, is it detox? Is it not? It's not a classic detox. I drink a silicon-rich mineral water every single day because I hope it is keeping my body burden of aluminium as low as it is possible to be, bearing in mind the myriad ways in which we are exposed to aluminium in our everyday life. And if I can't avoid all aluminium, then most people can't, because I know more about it than most people, so I can avoid it to a certain extent. But I can't avoid it enough, so I need to take my silicon-rich mineral water every day. Who doesn't drink water every day? Yes, people tell me it's expensive. I understand that. But is it more expensive than a cup of coffee? I don't know.
It's really expensive? Hiring a nurse to come help you change your diaper when you're 75 years old with Alzheimer's. So,
yes.
it's not
the answer to everything, but it does give your body the best chance of then working out its own problems, and perhaps with other complementary methods and techniques and even medicines. But in the presence of aluminium, all of that is downhill. You've got to get the aluminium out of your body.
Yes. And then we all need to read your book. It talks all about the body burden. It explains in great detail. I just love your colored inserts there. I should have made them slides. But when we go to your website, you have everything listed. You've got a wonderful Substack. I really like it. You'll be gaining lots of customers. I just know it, because the Solari family are going to be very excited, and they'll have lots of questions, I'm sure.
That's good.
So this is a wonderful book. So imagine you are an aluminum atom, Discussions with Mr. Aluminum. I love that, Mr. Aluminum.
The publishers, I don't have a lot of good to say about the publishers, but I'm not allowed to say bad, so I won't. But they were really unhappy with me choosing that title. They wanted it to be called something like The Aluminium Files or something. I mean, they had no real appreciation of what the book meant to me.
Right.
And the importance of that title is explained in the book, and I hope it becomes clear to people when they read that part, and you have to get close to the end in order to do so. But it is exactly how I have done my research when I was allowed to do so in the nearly 40 years. I had to be that aluminium atom in order to understand what was coming next. And I think you know, that's what the message I wanted to put over there, too. Right. But anyway, publishers.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, they don't understand, but I really like it and I understand it. So I think great. And I really think that it's going to open people's eyes, you know, deodorant, baby formula. Gosh, I looked at Advil the other day and I was like, didn't even know that. And then, you know, the antacids that everybody takes. I mean, I could go on and on. So you guys will just have to get the book.
I thought it was interesting that the U.S. in particular are having this shortage of infant formula at the moment on the shelves and stuff. Well,
I know. I was like, good.
Yes, I think that sounds like a good thing.
Right, exactly. Yes, well, no. I mean, their nourishing traditions at Weston Price Foundation has always had a homemade formula in case breast milk isn't available or something happens or you're having trouble with your milk supply. Yeah. But I've always found that if you're in a group of a bunch of moms, there's always extra breast milk to go around. There's always an underground railroad of breast milk that you can find somewhere in your community. Mm-hmm. But I was very happy.
Infant formula is the fast food for the child. I mean,
yes.
And actually, it's not really for the child. It's the fast food for the parent so that they don't have to worry about feeding the child.
And breastfeeding is not easy. And I've worked at places where they've made me go pump in a bathroom. You know, I mean, it's not fun. But I did it because I knew it was good for, you know, the health. And a lot of people, if some people have trouble, then there are wet nurses still. There are things on the underground, you know, community. That's the reason you have to know people. You have to talk to people. You have to get out there. You know, you have to have your group.
You know, the scandal of it for me is that in the last paper we published on infant formulas, and we've published three papers on this, but in the last one, we looked at specialty formulas. And these are ones where literally you're paying $50 a can because it's got all sorts of other potential ingredients and stuff. Now, some of these specialty formulas have very low levels of aluminium. Some of them, not all, but some of them. So the packaging is all the same. The processing is all the same. It tells us that when they choose their ingredients wisely, you can have a formula which is low in aluminium, at least lower. You might almost say it's good enough because some people, you know, they have no choice. They need to use something. So the normal formula that sits on the shelf does not have to have aluminium in it. It's only there because there's no regulation preventing it and it's cheap. It makes, you know, it's cost effective to leave the aluminium there. I mean, is my Autism One talk back in 2015 talks all about. I mean, the infant is like the perfect experimental model of aluminium intoxication. They have absolutely no choice. The majority of them are being fed with infant formulas, and the majority of them are being injected with aluminium in vaccines, and all of this in the first few days, weeks, months of life. And then we wonder why we have such an epidemic of bad health in the developed world, in the Western world.
And
clear and obvious why, because of what we feed our children in the first years of their lives. And it's a scandal.
Exactly. Yes, very much so. And not even to mention where they mine the aluminium in the third world. They go in and they, I mean, that's a whole nother thing. That could take a whole other interview.
Environmental impact is huge. Of course it is.
Right. And I'm not saying that I don't want aluminum around, because I actually like to fly in an airplane if they're not making me take a test or something. But, you know, there's ways for us to make this safer. I just know it. And I think that this is going to help us all know how to do
that. Right now, what you know is that there's no indication that anybody, anywhere, government or otherwise, is going to make it safer for us. So you have to take this into your own hands. And if you can afford it, you need to include a silicon-rich mineral water. And it doesn't have to be the only water you drink. I drink tap water as well, because I think our tap water here is fine in the United Kingdom. And I drink that as well. So I'm only drinking about a litre, maybe slightly less, of a silicon-rich, because I can't afford it either. You know, I'm spending £70, nearly $100 a month on mineral water.
Right.
It's not my only source of water. It's one source of water.
Right. That's what we do, a litre a day, you know, if we can, my son. I do it. I use aluminum-free deodorant. You know, I go through my medicines, and every once in a while I'll eat a sports bar, and then I'll look at the package and I'll go, oh, aluminum, you know,
sports bar in the aluminum foil.
Yes. And I'm just, you know, but you're running and you think, oh, I've got to eat something fast before I faint. Yeah. So Jen, you could have made yourself a sandwich before you left home. Yeah. So I'm getting better. We all can do better, but this is up to us. We need to spread the word. Yeah. I think that if we all showed up, pitchforks and torches, doesn't have to be violent, but we let everybody know we don't want this anymore and we need things to change. And we vote with our money. And also, the other thing that I wanted to bring up before we wrap this up, I saw you in an interview and you were talking about the manufacturing of it and all the jobs that brings of manufacturing aluminum adjuvants. Let's just take that. There's a lot of different aluminum manufacturing, but let's just take that one. There's a big one in Scotland that you were talking about. They're everywhere.
Just coincided with me being shut down.
I know. Isn't that strange? Yeah. That's really weird. Another thing is, don't work for those people, you know, don't work for them. I know it's work. I know it's jobs. I know it's money, but I ran into this the other day. I was talking to a friend of mine and behind her was her vaccine injured son. And she was telling me about her other son who was getting into this one program, but she wasn't sure if he was going to make it in or whatever. And I said, oh, what program is it? And she says, oh, well, it's run by Upjohn and it's a institute for this. I'm like, wait, you're going to give his brain to Upjohn? What? You know, so, and she ended up not, and she changed and she went to a community college with him and got him in some advanced math courses. He's like a super genius in seventh grade. And he's really happy there. And the institute is, anyway, but people really have to look at that. And Catherine talks about that. It's called the Red Button Story. Uh-huh. And she was doing she wrote one of the Solari reports about it, but I'm just going to read this really quickly. She said, in the summer of 2000, I asked a group of 100 people at a conference of spiritually committed people who would push a red button if it would immediately stop all narcotics trafficking in their neighborhood, city, state, and country. So if you could press a red button and stop all the narcotics trafficking, because that's a lot of our money, right? That the bad people make money on. Out of 100 people, 99 said they would not push the red button. So when surveyed, they said they did not want their mutual funds to go down if the U.S. financial system suddenly stopped attracting an estimated $500 billion to $1 trillion a year in global money laundering. They did not want their government checks jeopardized or their taxes raised because of resulting problems financing the federal government deficit. Our financial profiteering and complicity is not limited to the aristocrats and the elites who do their bidding. Our financial dependency on unsustainable economics is broad, ingrained, and deep. So I believe that we can make simple choices. Vote with our feet. Use products without aluminum first. Mm. Also, contact the ones that do use it. Why are you putting this in my baby formula? Mm. You know, ask them. And it might not do anything, but if there's more and more people that do it, and then they notice, oh, nobody's buying it, even though I have Biden pushing it right now, you know, and help people out. If you know somebody who has extra breast milk, contact somebody who needs it, you know, just let's start to do that. The other thing is, don't have people, I mean, don't let your kids go to work for those companies. Find a different company, find somebody else. There's money to be made everywhere, and it doesn't have to be for an aluminum adjuvant company. Anyway.
But all of this requires quite a paradigm shift. I mean, I always say that, you know, the problem we have today is medicine. You know, medicine is only for the it's only for people who are ill. We should be looking after the healthy. And if we look after the healthy, there won't be any ill. And, you know, but these are big shifts in thinking that we need to. And of course, they don't fit in with the economic paradigm. I mean, I haven't met Catherine yet. I hope to meet her sometime in the future. But one of the things that I do is I pay by cash. So,
yay, cash Friday, you know, cash
obviously,
every day.
whenever I can, I tell my friends, pay by cash. They won't know you're here. They won't know why. They won't know anything about you. You know, at least, okay, we've got to get it out of a hole in the wall or something. We've got to get it out of the bank. After that, pay cash.
Absolutely.
Small things.
100%.
Small things.
Yeah, things.
It's all about messages. I mean, the message about aluminium, you sort of think is more widespread, but it's not actually. The message is not out there, really. People just think of it, and most people think, oh, it's a heavy metal. It's not a heavy metal even. You know, they put it into another category with something else. You know, that's why I don't like the use of the word detox, because that is the certain things that you can remove, and then you're not necessarily going to be intoxicated by them again. Whereas with aluminium, you cannot avoid it. So you have to have a philosophy to deal with aluminium as opposed to a detox, a philosophy for life, which involves a silicon-rich mineral water and the sorts of things you've talked about, where you change your way of life to reduce your overall exposure. I mean, I haven't drunk, I think in America you call them sodas. I haven't drunk anything out of a can or something for as long as I can remember. I don't drink any of these products that are in aluminium cans. And everyone should stop drinking products in aluminium cans.
I totally agree. And if you want bubbly water, they make those little things that you can put your water in and you can press the button and it like sends bubbles into the water and you can have bubbly water if you'd like, no problem. So, you know, you can add your own fruit flavor or whatever that's natural or organic with no aluminum. Yeah. And there's lots of different things that you can do. So what can we do to help support you? I know that I'll be listing your website, your Substack. Is there anything else that you want to mention?
No, I mean, all I do now when I have I'm able to do so, like today with you, is try to continue to keep the message as high a profile as possible. You know, I still have one member of my team, in fact, Matthew Mould, who did all the incredible microscopy of brain tissue. He's still looking for a job. So if I can find him a job, he really wants to continue this work. But, you know, we haven't been able to do that so far.
Okay.
So we are accessible to either directly through email to me or through the website. And we are open to anybody who wants to communicate with us on this subject. You know, I'm sort of limited in what I can do at the moment, but, you know, we hope that will change in the future too, so.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I just know that you're going to feel better and everything's going to work out. And this is really exciting to be able to have talked with you today. I am so thrilled that I got to tell everybody about one of my favorite books. You can see that I've got all my little bookmarks, and I don't want to open it because I've got way too many highlighted parts. My husband's like, just highlight the whole book, right? Don't you? I'm like, but that's important.
Yeah. Anyway. I'm pleased.
All right. Yeah. So thank you very much. Thank you for joining us on the health series. This was the first episode. So that's very exciting.
I am honored and privileged. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Oh, no, my privilege.
Look forward to seeing who is going to follow me.
Yes. We all need to hop on Substack. And could you say the name of the website again? Aluminium Research
Group. Yeah.
Group.
It's on the
That's
email.
Right.
On every email, you'll see the list of
guests. Yes, and I'll post it. I just wanted to say it just in case anybody was wondering while they're listening.
It's the English spelling, aluminium. English spelling. Yeah. Aluminium Research Group. Yeah.
And when I say it, aluminium, it makes me sound smarter. All right. Thank you so much for joining us on the Solari Health Series Report. All right.
Thank you.